following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning on the First Coast. It's 10 o'clock, and that can only mean one thing. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
Louisa Russeman.
And Dave Russeman.
And for those of you who have been loyal listeners for a long time, you probably remember those two voices and names from a year or so ago, whatever it was. And Louisa and David are security specialists. They are our technology advisors, providers, consultants, all those things. And there have been some events that started up on May 12th this year that caused me to believe it's been a little too long since we've talked to these people. Things are getting worse out there, as we predicted a year ago. So we're going to go through the usual opening things with the market wraps and so on, because, hey, that's going to be fun.
It is fun this week today.
Yeah. So we'll do that. And then, of course, any caller wants to come in and talk about whatever you want to talk about is fine. But we're going to, in office or in the studio time today, we're going to do a little bit of concentrating on cybersecurity and the problems that have been creeping up lately. Excuse me, one and all. But before that, I need to welcome everybody. Of course, the every weekers, and we know a lot of them. Thanks again for tuning in. And if you're telling your friends, that's fine. If you're just tuning in by chance or because you've heard of it, welcome. Stick around for an hour, and hopefully we will have some good stuff to tell you. I do have to mention, for all concerned here, that the political events of this week have warned me that the next 6 months in Northeast Florida are likely to be hot. I just want you all to be prepared. Okay. That's my little wisdom of the day. That's not the only thing that's hot.
The market is also hot.
This was quite a week, and I just know Adam's going to have a really good time doing this, so take it away.
Well, I have to start off with so much for sell in May and go away. If you had sold going into May, you would have missed 1.3% rise on the Dow, 2.3% on the S&P, and a whopping 4.3% on the NASDAQ. So the moral of that story is, don't listen to stupid old sayings.
I like that.
The market's been moving sideways for most of the last month, and really for a couple months. This week changed all that, as we mentioned it might last week, and it continued a new leg up that just started and looks to possibly continue into next week. I'm pretty encouraged right now.
Yeah, and it's kind of a Goldilocks situation, because things aren't too hot and things aren't too cool. And I kind of liked, although I have to say there was a lot of confusion in the jobs reporting, which I didn't expect.
I'll get to that.
People may remember I didn't expect it this week, but it did come out this week, and I'm glad, because it plays right into everything that's going on. So, as you said, he'll get into that. But I want you to know that I did a little more digging, and okay, of course there are some reasons that aren't talked about on TV and on radio shows and in the printed stuff. So when Adam's got it all wrapped up, then I'm going to tell you the other part of the story, my Paul Harvey moment for today.
So this week we saw the Dow move up about 0.6%, the S&P up 1%, and the NASDAQ, following the recent trend, was the big mover, up 1.5%. A couple of interesting notes about this rally. It's not been a value rally whatsoever. Stocks with the lowest P.E. ratios and the highest dividends have lagged behind the rest of the market. And a great example of this is the ETF SDOG that we talk about pretty frequently on this show, and had a great run last year, but this year it's been stuck in a pretty narrow trading range, while growth stocks have pretty much outpaced it. Don't worry, though. These things come and go, and the value trade isn't dead. It's just kind of in a holding pattern and lagging the rest of the market. It might even be a potential buying opportunity.
I wouldn't sell it, that's for sure.
One of the biggest factors in the positive way this year has been international exposure. Stocks with the most international exposure have seen the biggest run-ups recently. Some of this is attributable to the weakening dollar, but some of it is also attributable to the fact that the international markets have suddenly done really well, where they've been lagging behind the U.S. market for a long time. So look for stocks that have big presences outside of the U.S. If you thought that Trump pulling out of the Paris Treaty would cause an uptick in volatility, you would have been wrong. The market shrugged off that news and then shot higher, signaling that this move is perceived to be good for business. It was a short week, but that didn't stop a ton of economic data from being released. As Dad mentioned, the data was mixed, with the especially in the jobs portion of the reports. The ADP, or private report, on Wednesday looked great, coming in at 253,000 versus an expected 180,000 jobs created. Then Friday, the government numbers came out, and it was pretty bad. The expectation was for 182,000, but the actual number was 138,000, and it had some downward revisions to the last couple months. Not only was that number disappointing, but the wage growth missed expectations, and the labor force participation rate actually declined, which it's been on a incline lately. So it was kind of a surprising all-around report. The only bright spot was that unemployment rate dropped again, coming in at 4.3%, a new post-recession low.
And does that fit in line with all those other numbers?
Not at all.
And that's why I'm here.
Okay. Tell us.
These numbers that we get reported to us are seasonally adjusted.
That's correct.
The government seasonally adjusts one way. The ADP seasonally adjusts another way. There are 3.475 million people working today that were not working on Inauguration Day.
That's a lot of people.
That's not seasonally adjusted. So what you're hearing, there are terms I couldn't even say on the radio for the numbers that I think that we're seeing right now. But just to know, don't believe everything you read. Now, stare right at the middle of your radio. See that? This piece of paper tells the other half of it. The government workers, we mentioned last month that there were a few more government workers than people expected. That was an anomaly. For the past 6 months, the number of government jobs created is minus 13,000.
Can we get a yay?
Yes. Hallelujah. Sing it. Shout it. Whatever. The 6 months before that, it was 150,000 with a plus sign in front of it. What happened? I know. New administration. Now, does that get reported in the news? No. That's why you listen to this show. So you get the rest of the story. And that is my Paul Harvey moment. If we get a negative job growth next month and it's all in government jobs, we'll have a party. And you're all invited.
All right. Sounds good.
So you always have to read under the headlines, folks. You know these people have a mission, and anything that doesn't fit with their narrative is not going to be reported completely or straight up.
A couple of weeks ago, I did a report on the jobs reports, and it's really not unusual to see a divergence between the ADP and the government numbers. It happens almost every month. In fact, there are very few times where they're spot on and move together. So in answer to that, you really have to look at the trend in both and draw your conclusions from that, rather than looking at the number as it's reported month to month, because if it does swing pretty wildly from 250,000 to 100,000, there's no rhyme or reason to it.
No, there isn't. Well, since we want to get into our topics of the day right afterwards, I'm going to bring you the trivia question right now, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call 904-636-7888, and the voice you hear will probably be Ken himself. Now, this one is about numbers and money. What is America's average credit score?
That I don't know.
When you find out, you're going to understand that, as my trivia usually does, I have a point about that. And I'm not going to tell you the point unless you keep listening. So don't go anywhere. We're going to have to take our first break. When we come back, Louisa and David are going to talk a little bit about something that finally, you know how I hate misnomers, this thing is finally appropriate named, and it's called WannaCry. And we're going to explain to you why, if you ever get it, you're going to want to cry. Believe me. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
Louisa Russeman.
And Dave Russeman.
And as I, for those of you who turned in late, as I explained earlier, Louisa and David are here because they are technology consultants. They kind of specialize in little businesses like ours where, you know, if you want to know who needs to be concerned about data security and all that, the answer to that is very simply everyone. But if you're in a regulated business such as we are, you got to be real concerned because it could not only cost you money, it could cost you your business, it could cost you your clients, all that stuff. So we have to pay particularly close attention to these things, which brings me to May 12th. On May 12th, the most appropriately named thing that I've ever seen go around 150 countries and 200,000 computers is a little thing called the WannaCry ransomware attack. And what it does, for those of you who are at all familiar with ransomware, is it takes over your computer and lets you pay them money to give it back to you. And a lot of people, it seems, aren't sufficiently backed up. And that's where the expertise comes in. So I'm going to let whichever of you wants to introduce the whole thing, and don't be afraid somewhere in the next 40 minutes or so to plug your company a couple of times. Hey, it's free. It's our show. We say it's okay. It's okay.
All right.
So tell people what you do, how to find you, and what's important about it. Now, I'm going to bring up for everybody in this room, there is a caller on the line. It might be the trivia. We always put them to the top. So we'll...
No caller.
No, okay, it's not one this time. But should it happen and I interrupt you, it's not me being an interrupter. It's me just following my own rules. So, okay, well, let's talk about WannaCry.
All right. Well, let me just start with Boxmeda. Like Steven said, we're an IT service organization. We are service and consultants specializing in the financial services and the regulated space. So what does that mean? That means that our everyday is spent on staying in the trenches with regard to cybersecurity and learning, you know, what are these new pitfalls out there, better ways to protect yourself, and how to apply those to our clients to make sure that they're doing the right things. As you know, I mean, technology is a constantly evolving.
We'll get a little buzz on that mic.
Yeah. I don't know. I hear that, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Let me see.
Maybe a little closer to it or turn
it
over.
There we go. I mean, technology is a constantly evolving.
It's not a real good mic, I'm afraid. Okay, well, carry on. We'll apologize up front for that, folks.
So it's constantly evolving. And so whenever we see things like the WannaCry show up, we're obviously not surprised. But we do know how it happens, and we know how to protect you. So I'll let Dave pick it up there, and we'll start talking about what some of the more important things are that you should be doing, and then we can go into a little bit more detail if time allows.
Yeah, first off, why don't you tell us exactly what this thing does, the WannaCry, and because of how bad it is and so on, then what should we do to make sure that it would never happen to us? But the way it works, I find a little fascinating, frankly. I hate to praise people who are spending all their time doing bad things, but you got to admit it's pretty clever.
Well, nowadays, you know, most of what we see as far as impact in the security space is through email. A suspicious email comes in. It pretends to be from someone you know, a client you know, a customer you know, a resume that you may have, maybe hiring, and a resume comes in with an attachment that's got malicious software attached, or some sort of urgent request. Hey, your iTunes account has been compromised. Please go here and, you know, rectify your passwords has been compromised, things like that. So we see, I mean, I wish I could say we don't see them a lot, but we get calls constantly in our office for, is this legitimate email? Is this a valid request? And, you know, we go through it.
I'm glad that people ask before they open it.
It's our mission.
Most people believe, you know, hey, I've got antivirus, or, you know, I haven't patched, or I have my machine patched, so I'm safe. It's just not the case. I mean, you really have to be educated these days on the threats. You have to educate your employees on how to deal with those threats, what these threats look like. They change constantly. There's different vectors these days than there were in the past, where you just had to worry about locking the door, so to speak, and you were happy. Most of the incidents today are employee let them in, or employee did something that didn't follow procedure, or an employee used a computer that was their home computer that wasn't protected properly to do something business related. And we're finding that, you know, education is our number one priority these days. So we educate our clients constantly.
And Boxmeda does offer cybersecurity training for your staff. Good. If you're interested in that, give us a call.
What realistically is the smallest company that should be interested in hiring consulting?
One person.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah, I mean, cybersecurity.
Well,
people think it'll never happen to me. I'm a small business. It happens all the time. It really doesn't matter. If you're on the internet, you're vulnerable. If you don't back up your systems, you're vulnerable. If you don't have someone maintaining and monitoring and managing your systems, you're vulnerable. Most attacks, people don't even discover. I think the number now is like 6 months until after it happens.
Ooh, wow.
That, you know, if they've been compromised. So in the WannaCry example, you know, this took advantage of a vulnerability in Windows that was known, that was patched, I believe, in March. So most of the people that were infected just weren't patching.
Number one rule, keep your software up to date.
Exactly, and or hire someone to do it.
Like exactly. Us. Well, keep it up to date. You can do it by writing a check every month, or you can do it yourself.
Not to kind of go off tangent, but that's why people hire Boxmeda. We didn't have this problem in any of our clients.
Good.
But for the sake of the what they do is they send you an email and they get you to click and installs the software, encrypts your files or ransomwares your files, or there's various different techniques, and then it holds your system's ransom for bitcoins, which if you've even tried to pay those are not real easy to get in a hurry and get rid of, and then the clock is ticking every hour, they're charging you more and more and more. So at the end of the day, if you just have your systems properly maintained, properly managed, and you have your critical systems backed up and recoverable, you won't care. Okay, I got ransomware, big deal. Delete that computer, bring a new one in. I have my stuff. It'll be up 10, 15, 20 minutes, an hour, depending on your requirements.
What's the difference between backup and
recovery?
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's the word I was looking for.
Well, backup is like I can get to the state of the data that I was at whatever time I need it from. So a lot of people say, I'll do backups twice a day, once a day, 10 times a day, whatever your requirements are. If you're making a lot of changes daily, you might say, I need backups every hour. Recovery is the time to get that back. So there's some cases, if you have a terabyte of data, it might take you all day to recover that. So there's different solutions and techniques to get your recovery time faster, because downtime costs money.
Does this thing encrypt your programs as they're installed on the machine, or does it
most of the time it's just the data? Most of the time it's just the data.
So you don't really need a whole ghosted system for most of these.
That gives you faster recovery.
Okay,
yeah, so you just really need a plan for both. So you need a plan for recovery, retention of your data, and you need a plan for recovery and what's acceptable downtime for your business. So in our world, we bucket that into sort of whatever you want to do, class A, class B, class C. Like, here's I need 1 hour recovery time for these features, like for these services, for this data. Maybe my banking system, my accounting system, my email needs a 1 hour recovery time. But, you know, the company data, maybe we have our quarterly meetings and we have our meeting minutes. I can wait 3 weeks. I don't care if I lose those for 3 weeks. And you sort of collate your data into what's acceptable downtime, and that will help you budget and judge where you need to be spending your time and your money on recovery and backup solutions.
And this is done offsite?
Yes, in every case you do it offsite.
Okay.
And most of the time we'll do it to two geographical locations.
Right. Because if you do get encrypted on your network, it'll go out and encrypt whatever it can find. So sometimes, depending on what kind of backup you have, if you don't have a company like Boxmeda, you know, it could potentially encrypt your on-site backups as well.
We'll tighten all the screws on that during the break. All right. Again, the smallest company is one. If you have a one- or two-person company, three-person company, how many people actually think to do that before they get hit? Or is it like buying a home security system that you install the day after you get robbed?
I think situations like WannaCry, and I think the media, you know, the mediaization of all of this is starting to educate business owners and making them realize this has to be done.
So inadvertently, they're doing us a favor.
They are. I think people are becoming quickly aware.
There's sort of two scenarios. I mean, one is education, obviously. If you're sort of not knowledgeable of the risks, you won't try to resolve them or prevent them. But what we do see as well, I mean, it's the industry. A lot of IT has a bad reputation as well for selling solutions that aren't, you know, proper, or for wasting money in clients. And you find
it's like
that
financial advisors.
Yeah. So you find out that there's a lot of reluctance to trust the IT advisor. So a lot of that is more on us to educate, hey, maybe you've had a bad experience with a previous advisor, but that doesn't change the fact that you need to be doing these things. So sometimes we run into more of a trust issue where they've been burned before. They've spent a ton of money on a solution that they see that they've never used or they've never needed because they've never been attacked. And then they come in and they go, well, I've been spending $20,000 a year. I don't need this.
Interesting similarities between business models.
You know, I mean, in the end of the day, it's really an insurance policy. It's risk reward. Are you willing to take the risk on your business for how much money to spend to resolve it?
Okay. Well, after the break, I want to get down to some nuts and bolts. How long does it take and how much does it cost for the average little or medium-sized business to secure itself and maintain it that way? Because I know a lot of people put things off because it costs money.
And I think we should put that in perspective as to what it costs if you get hit
exactly.
by one of these attacks.
And exactly. And then I also wanted to get your opinions on the insurance that people offer for cybersecurity hacks. Is it worth it? Is it expensive? And that kind of thing. So let's talk about money and data security right after the break. Trivia question is still out there. What is the average American's credit score nowadays? And there is a reason that I asked this, as there usually is. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after the break, and we'll see you on the other side. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the very special cybersecurity edition of Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Louisa Russman.
And Dave Russman.
And that mic didn't get better. I fixed it myself, and it didn't get better.
Imagine that.
Imagine, if you would. So we're going to do a little sharing here. It's no hill to a climber, as they say. Okay, we wanted to start talking about the financial end of keeping yourself safe and the cost of keeping yourself safe versus the cost of, oops, because once you say that word, then you're really going to be spending some money. So what does it take, Louisa and David, what does it take for somebody who has basically nothing? I have a computer and a couple of people. I have no security. I have no backup. I have no this because we don't need it. And they'll tell you stories about that we don't need it too. And what would it take for people to get set up? And then what does it take to stay set up financially?
Okay, so I mean, doing as far as system maintenance is concerned and the things that Boxmeda does, I mean, we have plans that are designed for small business because we don't want any business to go without security. So just to give you an idea, you might be looking at maybe $50 a month per workstation. Okay, just as it could be a little bit less. And we talk about business, I mean, we talk about data protection. There are solutions that can be put in place that are very low cost of entry if you're willing to, like what Dave said, there's sort of a graph of, you know, recovery time and cost, right? If you're willing to accept a little bit longer recovery time, you can probably put, you know, a solution in place that might cost you, you know, $50 to $70 a month. And you might still, and you will still have proper backups both on-site and off-site, because that's very important. So it's really not, we're not talking thousands of dollars if you're a small business. There are ways to do this for maybe $150 a month or less.
I already knew this. I'm kind of like the lawyer. You don't ask questions unless you're pretty sure of the answer. But it's because I have always found it very reasonable, and I think there's a misconception among small business people that you can't afford to have real experts come in. And as Adam was saying in the break, we have the same thing where people come in to see us, and some are concerned that they're having to pay us. Well,
right.
Yeah, is that worth it or not? Is it worth it for people to pay you $150, $300 a month, whatever? What would it take after they have a problem? Then what are they talking about for expense?
Right. Or we could come in as a consultant and teach you how to do it and say, okay, well, we'll just teach you how to do it. And, you know, if you're not willing to put in the commitment of having that, you know, monthly recurring, well, let us at least come in and teach you how and what to do, you know, and
I mean,
then just.
If you look at it from just a time materials, from time and materials, if you're a business owner, you don't want to spend your time patching computers. You don't want to spend your time looking at virus threats. You don't want to spend your time performing backups. You know, so for a small monthly fee, you have a whole team of experts to do this for you.
Yeah. I know what we pay, and I think it's very, reasonable for the service and what it provides and the peace of mind.
Why would you want to be involving yourself and keeping up with that? Run your business. Let someone like us or any IT provider that's capable.
I agree, and I'm going to interrupt briefly to say good morning, Larry.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Just great. How are you?
Doing well. How about you, Adam?
Just fine. Thanks for calling, Larry.
What's cooking?
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Love the show. You guys do great work.
Thank you.
Listen, I got a question for you today with what you're talking about. Can you give us some solutions of some things that people can do to protect their online data, online personal data, and things like that?
You're talking from a non-business perspective then, just as an individual?
Yeah, as an individual.
That's a good question.
It is. Take it away, folks.
Well, I mean, it's kind of an open-ended question, but in yeah, the sense of your personal data, I mean, essentially we kind of live by, if it doesn't need to be out there, don't put it there. And anything that you believe is important information, bank account information, like Facebook, for instance, I wouldn't be posting things in the present. I would be posting them in the past so people can't take advantage of what you're currently doing. But as far as, you know, securing your data, for most sites that have anything important, turn on two-factor. Just turn on two-factor authentication. Have your cell phone get a text message or have whatever method they have to authenticate that you are who you say you are, and keep track of where machines and things are logging in from. If you log in, most of these providers will say, hey, I see an Android device, I see an iOS device from Jacksonville logging in. Is this valid? And you can sort of check the history. Keep an eye. You have to be vigilant. But if you're not using two-factor, you're pretty much opening it up to all of those breaches that have been out there, because people tend to use the same IDs and passwords on multiple sites. And if that's been compromised on a Yahoo, say, for example, and you're using your Yahoo email address and the same password on 10 other sites, they're going to try it on 10 other sites. And if they get in, you know, it's kind of your fault for using the same password on every site and not turning on the two-factor. But any legitimate business these days online will have two-factor. If they don't, you need to question whether you're, why you're doing business.
I've gone to it for many, many things. And at first, it seems like a real pain. And then it's just part of what you do. After a couple of weeks, you're used to it.
And the one other thing maybe I'll add, which is sort of an indirect effect, is anything that you, any website you use that goes in and withdraws money from your bank account, we all do it. You know, your utility, your, you know, you pay your utilities, your phone bill, it just goes in and it pulls the money out of your bank account every month. I would say put the funds that are necessary to pay for that overhead every month, put it in a different account that doesn't have overdraft protection, and have those websites go into that separate bank account and pull the money from there.
I like that.
Oh. Yeah, I do too.
I never thought about that aspect of having no overdraft protection.
What if JEA gets hacked, right? And JEA comes in and takes your money out of your bank every month.
Yeah.
You just don't know. I mean, it hasn't happened, but you don't know.
One thing I always try and do is not do that where they pull the money out. I always try and go into my bill pay and push it out.
Even
and so
pay,
that they,
I mean,
don't
PayPal's
have my information.
Been compromised twice, maybe three times. I would say anything that you're even going to use PayPal to pay for, I would put that money also in that separate bucket that doesn't have overdraft protection.
That's another one. I always use credit cards on PayPal rather than having it hit my bank, because I feel
more secure. I believe
this
week, Vistar was in the news for some money that magically disappeared out of accounts.
Yep. I think about 500 customers in Jacksonville.
And you're not protected from the government on those.
Right. FDIC is for the liquidity. Bank. Right. Not for health.
Yeah. Now, from a PR perspective, of course, they're going to replace your money. They're not going to just let it go. But yeah, still, you're not protected.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like knowing what something will do or expecting that it might do something better than that. FDIC is not going to hold your hand.
We have a saying in our training class that if it's easy for you, it's easy for the hackers. You have to kind of keep that in mind. If you're going to be, and my password's going to be ABC123, and I'm going to leave it automatically logged in on my desktop, and I'm going to walk away, and it's always up and running, and, you know, other areas where you just make it real convenient for yourself, well, then it's convenient for them.
Do you guys call that the Podesta effect?
Something like that.
I like that.
What's your password? PASSWORD. Oh, how novel.
Welcome one and password one are magical passwords.
Hey, Larry, did that give you some ideas?
Yeah, that's great, guys. Thank you so much. I appreciate all your insight.
Do you want to take a shot at our trivia today?
What was the question?
What is the average credit score among Americans nowadays?
Do I have to hit it dead on the head, or is there a range here?
I'll give you a range of plus or minus 5. I'm a nice guy.
Plus or minus 5. Okay. I'm going to say 575.
I have good news, but not for you.
Oh.
You're too low.
Too low. Okay.
Hope I didn't build you up there for a moment. No, it's actually better than that. You know, I would have guessed very similarly to what you just did.
Me too.
But I said, the good news for the public is that it is actually higher than that. We appreciate it. Okay. You have a great weekend. The concept of credit score seems so superfluous when you get a little older because it tends to get better. But boy, if you're young and borrowing money, stay tuned so you hear the bottom line on this one, because it can really, really change your personal economics. Speaking of which, when you're talking to Larry and he's talking about the stuff we do online and bill paying and all that, what is that really? But it's your family business, isn't it? The money you have, the money you pay out, isn't that just running your own business out of your home? Should that be treated any less securely than the business that generates your money? I think not, perhaps.
One other thing about that, too. If you are doing banking at an open Wi-Fi connection at Starbucks, you also deserve to be ripped off. Don't do it.
That is exactly right.
We can talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. We've got a break again. So when we come back in, your calls or questions would be welcome. That's 904-222-TALK. Lines are open. Otherwise, we're going to go a little bit deeper into what the average person should do. And as soon as we come back, I want David and Louisa to tell you all exactly how to look them up and find them. Because, hey, they can. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
Louisa Russman.
And Dave Russman.
And we are talking cybersecurity, the cost to you, the cost of prevention of problems, the cost of solving problems, and anything else you'd like to talk about in the realm of cybersecurity. And then I want to throw one more thing into the mix, but the first thing I want to do is to ask David and Louisa how you out there, whether you're an individual, small business, medium business, large business, how you can get to them and the kinds of services they offer. In other words, this is your shameless self-promotion minute. Take it away.
That's me. All right. How to reach us? Call us at 904-229-0922. Our website is boxmeta.com. You can go there and find out all about our services and what our clients have to say.
B-O-X-M-E-T-A.
M as in mother, E-T-A. And what does the name mean? Absolutely nothing.
That's true.
It's Dave's creativity about, how many years ago now? 14 years ago?
A long time ago.
But you know what? It's very memorable.
I think so, too. I'd like to say we have a 99.5% client retention rate. Since we've been doing this in Jacksonville in 2006, great, or 2005, really, we've never lost a client.
And you've been hiring people, I understand?
We have. We've been growing at a very fast pace. The word's getting out that what we're doing is very unique. There aren't, I'd like to say, I haven't come across any other, I should say, peer. I don't like to say competitors because I don't think we even compete with them.
Now I'll play dumb for a minute. What does it talk to you guys? Or what does it take or cost to talk to
it
you guys?
It doesn't take anything to cost. It doesn't cost anything to talk to us,
it's
of
contagious.
Course. It is, right? It doesn't cost anything to talk to us. We have different plans for different types of businesses. So we have a very customized program. So much to what we were saying before, don't be afraid that you're too small and may not fit. We have a plan for you.
Well, we hired you at a Starbucks, as I recall, when we had...
No business.
Even have a computer.
That's right. So our services range from consulting to, like Dave said, monthly managed services, which means that we're constantly watching your network. We're protecting your network with all of the best practices. And, you know, we're constantly in the trenches every day. So we're hearing, you know, what are the new threats, what's out there. And so not only are we a service provider, but we're an educator.
Do we link on our website to them?
No, but we could.
Okay.
Yeah. So
anybody who's listening that's interested in this, I know a lot of people are driving, don't write things down when you're driving. And if you're like me, you get home and you say, boy, that was interesting. Well, who were they? And, you know, senior moments are all over the place. And Yeah, we will, if Adam, if you think about it, we'll link to it. But briefly, we said that we hired them before we even had business. I'm not lying about this, folks. We set that up before we set up the company because we didn't want to have 1 minute where we were not covered the right way. So we were up and running before we were up and running from a cybersecurity standpoint, and I would never regret that decision, absolutely. Plus, they designed and built, you know, bought and built our whole network infrastructure, that sort of thing, and we literally had to worry about it not at all. And one more quick plug for you guys. Mm-hmm. I have called the service department a couple of times, and it gets fixed, and it gets fixed now.
Correct. We answer the phone every time. We don't like voicemail any more than you do. So I believe in standing what, you know, what we expect that we receive is what we provide as well. The other thing we do is also if you have, you know, a staff and you want to educate your staff about how to avoid phishing emails, what do they look like? I come in and give a 1 hour presentation. If you don't have an office that can accommodate that, we actually have a training room in our building that we will hold the conference in. If you'd like to bring your staff in, offer lunch, offer breakfast or not. But we have the facility to do that as well.
We also know that on certain workstations within a business, you are able to control what kinds of things those workstations can and cannot do.
Correct.
In other words, you could probably block out Facebook time or something like that.
Yes. If we put the security, you know, the security systems that we put in place, all of that comes with it. I mean, we can, like you said, we can block where you go, where you don't go, if, you know, work with the business owner on what makes sense for the company. You know, but the word I preach in my cybersecurity conferences is paranoia. It really is. I mean, you have to be absolutely paranoid. And like Dave said, too, if it's easy for you, it's easy for them. At every click, at every, I mean, it's anything that you do that is digital and not even just digital. I mean, I think a lot of times we get so caught up in thinking about protecting ourselves and all of our electronic media. But, you know, go back 50 years, you know, hackers have existed forever. Right. I mean, so you have to, you know, dot every I and cross every T. But just with digital media, it's just become an overwhelming amount of risk.
You know the old saying, just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Exactly. I mean, like Dave said, every email, do not open anything that you do not absolutely 100% know that you're expecting, have requested, or have confirmed in some way, shape, or form. I mean, if it is an email with, you know, I hate whenever I see those, oh, the LinkedIn, look to see who's been looking at your profile. Well, if you really want to know, don't click on the email that has the link that tells you to see who's been looking for your profile. Go log into your LinkedIn account and go click on the let me see who's been looking at my profile, but do it from within the website.
One of the things that Sarah and I have adopted when we get the notices, there's a new version of Shockwave, there's a new version of Java or something like that.
Right.
Rather than saying, okay,
correct,
then download it for me, we go
to take yourself directly to the source.
Yeah.
Don't click on the email to take you to the source.
That seems like the easiest advice that anybody could ever get.
Absolutely.
It's just not quite as convenient.
If it's convenient for you, it's convenient for them. Like what Dave was saying too, on Facebook, always posting things in the past, not in the future. You know, let's say your sister has posted that there's just been a great family reunion or whatever it might be. How easy is it to find out somebody's email address these days? It's very easy, especially if you have your email addresses on your website. You've just literally handed over a gold platter, okay? Somebody can email or compose an email from Stephen to Adam using a fake address in the background, and Adam will think that he received an email from Stephen. And they'll compose it in a way that makes sense, that'll be logical, that you might be inclined to actually respond and give an answer.
They do similar things with robocalls now.
Correct.
Where it seems to be coming from a local number. And
correct.
You know it's not.
Well, what they'll do is they know you're on vacation. So they'll say, hey, I know you're away today.
Yeah.
I need you to get this to me right away. And
brilliant.
It sounds legitimate because you're posting your life online.
Brilliant.
Or you'll get an email from your mother to say, hey, sweetie, I found these pictures from the trip that I forgot to share with you. Because they know on your Facebook you said that you were on a trip together. So how easy is that?
Adam, you're more in touch day to day with the systems and all that. Are there things you've run into that you've had?
They all come into the – so we put one of our email addresses online, but we don't do our personal email addresses. And that one I'm particularly careful about just deleting it unless I absolutely know that it's from someone that I trust or had requested. Right. And usually I won't request anything to that particular email address. So, yeah, we get, here's my resume. Do you have any openings this summer?
That resume one is bad.
Yeah. And then just things like that. I've seen a bunch of them recently, actually.
Yeah. One thing that I've been taught to look for, I don't know if everybody here agrees, if there are things misspelled in the email, is that a red flag?
Well, absolutely. Not if it's coming from you. Not the
present
best
company excluded. Is that a red flag?
Anything that the grammar looks suspect.
Yeah.
They'll usually have a typo in the domain name, things like that. It's pretty obvious.
The old Nigerian print scan.
You know, if you hover over the link, you'll be able to see it's not going, say, to LinkedIn or Facebook. It'll be going to LinkedIn.com. Or something like that.
Another one I've been seeing a lot is that your package is on its way. Click here to what package? I didn't request
package. Resumes, shared documents, friend requests, invoices, lost credentials. Mm-hmm. Your credentials have been compromised. Those kind of things you need to. Anything that has any sense of urgency to it, I would look twice. Is this really a legitimate message? Because most urgent things are not done through email.
True. There are some things that are coming that are supposedly from IRS and Social Security, places like that, and they're making them so believable.
They're perfect.
Websites are perfect. The grammar and the logos and everything, absolutely perfect. But these people don't do that.
You know what's even crazier too? I was actually watching a podcast yesterday. They will set up 1-800 service centers with bodies answering phones that are the trap. So it'll have a phone number in the email to say
English speaking.
Wow. It'll say call 1-800 and you think you're calling Wells Fargo, for example, if it says your account's been compromised and what you're calling is a fraud.
Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, the music's playing. We're going to have to run. Thanks so much for joining us. I thought with the recent problems we've had across a couple 100,000 computers in 150 countries would be interesting. The good news for America, the average credit score is up to 700. Now, why should we care about that? Well, 700, about 760 is where up from there is good credit. But 700 is where you usually start getting accepted rather than declined if you're going out to borrow money, buy a car or something like that. The average is there. Why? Partly because the economy is getting better, but also because a lot of the bankruptcies that took place years ago are now being cleared up. So go spend some money. We'll see you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.